Hey, so I am going to share a couple screens with you. So you should all, well, not all. If you're on the prayer list, then you would have gotten these notes. So hopefully you've got them on your tablet or on your computer or somewhere you can look at them. Otherwise, you can see them on the screen we're looking at. So the beginning of Genesis 25, the first 10 verses, you have to understand that these verses are not in chronological order when you look at the context of Genesis as a whole. In these first 10 verses, there are three events that actually fit into other places in Genesis. And when Moses wrote these things, the reason he didn't insert these events into their proper place in Genesis, but instead inserted them here in chapter 25, is because they weren't relevant to the flow of the covenant story and to the development of the primary characters. So now that Moses is finishing with Abraham and moving to Isaac, he's got to tie up a bunch of loose ends. He's got to conclude Abraham's life with some final thoughts. So, like I said, there's three events here that actually fit into other places. The first event is the first four verses, and this deals with Keturah and the concubines. And those four verses actually fit or belong between Genesis 16 and Genesis 17. So if you look at Genesis 16, it ends when Abraham is 86 years old. Genesis 17 begins when Abraham is 99 years old. So there's this 13-year gap between 16 and 17. And that's actually when Abraham took Keturah and these other concubines and had children with them. And I think we discussed this when we went through chapter 16. I can go into some briefly. In 16, Abraham is 86 years old. He had Ishmael. He was assuming that the covenant that God had made with him was going to go through Ishmael, because fact of the matter is, God never said otherwise. God had promised Abraham a son from his body. He had a son from his body, Ishmael. God never mentioned Sarah yet. So he has a son. He's still in the prime of life. Sarah can't have kids. I'll take another wife, take some concubines. I'll have some more kids, and that's when the sons of Keturah come in. That's when the sons of the concubines come in. It's interesting if you look at the birth order of Abraham's children as it's recorded in 1 Chronicles 1. The birth order is the firstborn Ishmael, then the sons of Keturah, and then Isaac. And so from that order, that's why we place Keturah and the concubines between Isaac and or Ishmael and Isaac. And it's not until Abraham is 99 years old that God finally says, "You're going to have another son." And he's thinking, "Okay, I'm 99 years old. I'm well past the prime of my life. Yeah, I'm not, we're not having any more kids. Sarah can't have any kids." And God springs the surprise, "Ah, that's where you're wrong. Sarah is going to have a kid. And you're going to name him Isaac. And the covenant, which you thought was going to go through Ishmael, is actually going to go through your last born, not your firstborn. So that event, these first four verses, Keturah and her sons and the concubines gets between 16 and 17. Verses 5 and 6 actually fit into the 75-year span of Isaac's life prior to the death of Abraham. So this is when he divvies up his property and gives it to the sons of Keturah, the sons of the concubine. Ishmael's already gone. And he sends them away, and we'll look at that in more detail in a moment. And then the inheritance actually goes to Isaac. The third event is verses 7 to 10. And this is the actual death of Abraham. And the chart I gave you, this timeline, the actual death of Abraham takes place somewhere in verses, after verse 24, or after verse 26. So Abraham doesn't die until Jacob and Esau are 15 years old. So this, when Moses puts Abraham's death here in verses 7 to 10, the actual death doesn't happen until after verse 26. So if you look at this chart, Isaac got married at 40, which means Abraham was 140. He has his first son, or his sons, when he's 60, which means Abraham is 160. And Abraham doesn't die until he's 175, which means Isaac is 75 and Jacob and Esau are 15. So even though Moses puts the death of Abraham at the beginning of the chapter, he actually doesn't die until Jacob and Esau are teenagers. And again, the reason he's lumping everything at the beginning of this chapter is he's tying up all these loose ends and he's moving to the next character. We got to finish up Abraham so we can move to Isaac. And then we're going to move to Jacob. And then we're going to move to Joseph. So he ties up all of these loose ends so he can move to his next character. And that's why he puts the death of Abraham here, when actually it doesn't take place until later on. So just go back to verse 1. He takes another wife, and a better translation would be he had taken another wife. The way some Bibles translate it, it makes it sound like this is the point where he takes another wife, when in fact it's not. So like the NIV, Abraham had taken another wife, and he had taken her between chapters 16 and 17. And she bore him several sons. Most of them aren't mentioned anywhere else in Scripture. Some of them, the names are the same names as other characters, so you got to be careful that you don't confuse some of these guys. So Zimram, not mentioned anywhere else except in the genealogy in 1 Chronicles. Jokshan, he's not mentioned anywhere else. Sheba, well, there were several other Shebas, and it's kind of difficult to determine, is this the Sheba, the Queen of Sheba one, or because there's there's a Sheba in Genesis 10. There's another Sheba in Genesis 20. And it's hard to figure out, okay, so where do these Shebas fit in? It's hard to tell. Dedan, and he's not to be confused with the Dedan in Genesis 10. And then you've got three names, Asherim, Letushim, and Lumim. Those are actually not the names. They're plural nouns, so they're the names of people groups. So Asherim, these are the descendants of Asher, and I'm not even sure Letush could be the other guy, and Lum, or however his name would have been pronounced, but they're people groups, so they're plural nouns. And then you've got Medan, and then Midian. Now, Midian actually plays a role big time in the Old Testament. Joseph, for example, when he was sold into slavery, he was sold to Midianite, Ishmaelite traders. When Moses fled from Egypt, after he killed the Egyptian, he fled to the territory belonging to Midian. Moses actually marries the daughter of the priest of Midian. The Midianites are the ones who join forces with the Moabites to hire Balaam to curse Israel. The Midianites were also some of the oppressors of Israel during the period of the Judges. And there's a few other places that the Midianites are mentioned, but those would be sons of Abraham through Keturah. And then you've got two other sons, Ishbak and Shua, and some grandsons. And I think there's a couple great grandsons in here as well. But Abraham, verse 5, gave all that he had to Isaac. So the inheritance, which was associated with the covenant, belonged to Isaac, even though Isaac was the last born of Abraham. He got the inheritance. He got the covenant. And the sons of the concubines, and notice that's plural, Keturah would have been a concubine, second wife, but there were other concubines. So there wasn't just Keturah. So Abraham had married Hagar in addition to Sarah. He married Keturah and some other concubines, plural. And the sons of the concubines, including Keturah, Abraham gave gifts to them while he was still alive and then sent them away from Isaac to the east. And the reason he sent them away is because the Abrahamic covenant and the land of Canaan belonged to Isaac. And to ensure that that would remain that way, Abraham sent his other sons away from Isaac to the east. Now, what's kind of interesting is Abraham never gave anything to Ishmael. He just sent him away with some bread and a skin of water. That was it. His firstborn gets sent away with a loaf of bread and a bag of water. These other sons, they get sent away with all sorts of gifts. And keep in mind, Abraham was incredibly wealthy. So they got sent away well off. But the rest of the inheritance, the land, that belonged to Isaac. So then he says, verse 7, these are all the years of Abraham's life that he lived, 175 years. And keep in mind, he doesn't die at this point. He dies after verse 26. But we got to tie this up. We got to finish Abraham, you know, put it in a nice little box, be done with him so we can move on to Isaac. So Abraham, 175 years old. He breathes his last, dies at a ripe old age. And it's interesting, there's only four people in the entire Bible that died at a ripe old age: Abraham, Isaac, Gideon, and David. All the rest, they just died. Abraham dies at a ripe old age. He's an old man. He's satisfied with life. I think in Abraham, he had accomplished all that he had set out to do. He enjoyed fellowship with the Lord his God. He enjoyed God's blessings on him. He had lots of sons to carry on his name. He had the son of the promise, Isaac, to carry on the covenant. And he even got to see Isaac's sons born. And one of them, Jacob, would be the beneficiary of that covenant as well. And then Moses says he was gathered to his people. And that's actually a statement that's used quite often in the Old Testament. And it has a connotation that there's a future state of existence beyond death. In other words, death isn't the end. He was gathered to his people. There's an afterlife. There's a state of existence beyond death. So his sons, Isaac and Ishmael. Now, Ishmael. At this point, Ishmael would be 89 years old. And he was 14 when Isaac was born, and he was sent away after Isaac was weaned. So let's, for the sake of argument, say that Isaac was weaned when he was 3. That means that Ishmael and Hagar were sent away when Ishmael was 17. So he hasn't seen Abraham, as far as we know, for 72 years. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and this map, the wilderness of Paran is on the Sinai Peninsula. So Abraham and Isaac, they're living up in this region here, and they Ishmael is down in the Sinai Peninsula in the wilderness of Paran. Somehow, some way, he heard that his father had died. Maybe during that 72-year absence, they kept in contact with one another. We just don't know. But somehow, some way, Ishmael found out that his father had died, and so Isaac and Ishmael come back together. Isaac's 75, Ishmael's 89. They come together and they bury Abraham in the cave of Machpelah. That's where Sarah is buried. Kind of interesting to note that none of the sons of Keturah or the sons of the concubines are mentioned here. So they come back together. They bury Abraham, same cave that Sarah's buried in. Eventually, Isaac will get buried there, and Jacob will get buried there. Rebekah and Leah get buried there. So then he says it came about after the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac. And Isaac lived in Beer Lahai-Roi, and that is down here. So Abraham was buried up here in Hebron. That's where the cave of Machpelah was. And Isaac is living way down here, south of Hebron, in the Negev. He's living in the desert. And now, again, remember, Abraham is still alive when the boys are born. So from here, we're finished as far as Moses is concerned. We're finished with Abraham. We still got to tie up some loose ends with Ishmael. We can't just leave Ishmael hanging. So we're gonna spend a few verses tying up Ishmael. And so he says, these are the records of the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar the Egyptian, Sarah's maid, bore to him. And then he lists some of these names, and there were 12 of them. These are the names of the sons of Ishmael by their names and the order of their birth. Nebaioth, the firstborn of Ishmael. And I think one of the reasons that Moses is going to mention these characters is because Nebaioth is actually going to become the father-in-law, no, the brother-in-law of Esau. So Esau marries Nebaioth's sister, a daughter of Ishmael. And, you know, depending on how you treat Esau's wives, he may have actually married two of them. So I think that may be the reason Moses is adding Ishmael's genealogy here, because they're going to come into play later on. And even Isaiah mentions Nebaioth. So you've got Nebaioth, the firstborn, and then Kedar, and then Adbeel, and Mibsam, and Mishma, and Duma, and Masa, and Hadad, and Tema, and Jetur, and Naphish, and Kedema. And some of these guys come into play as well. Kedar comes into play quite a bit in Isaiah and Jeremiah, that territory belonging to him. Tema also comes into play in Isaiah and Jeremiah, and Jetur and Naphish come into play when Israel enters the land, because the Reubenites and the Gadites and the Manassites actually went to war with these two people groups that came from Jetur and Naphish. So he says, these are the sons of Ishmael. These are their names by their villages, by their camps, 12 princes, according to their tribes. So Jacob has 12 sons and Ishmael has 12 sons. So lots of 12s here. And then he says, these are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137. He breathed his life, breathed his last, died, was gathered to his people, just like Abraham. So the Ishmaelites, they settled from Havilah, which we're not exactly sure where that is. Most believe that it's somewhere in north central Arabia. And this would be biblical Arabia, which is much bigger than modern Saudi Arabia. So it's somewhere in the Arabian desert here. And then as far as Shur, which is east of Egypt, so Shur would be somewhere in the Sinai Peninsula, as you go toward Assyria. And the Amalekites, according to 1 Samuel 15, actually lived in that same territory. And he settled, the Ishmaelites, settled in defiance of all his relatives. And the relatives of Ishmael would be the sons of Keturah and the sons of the concubines. So he was rather defiant. And that went along with the prophecy that God made to Hagar in Genesis 16, where he tells her that Ishmael's hand is going to be against everyone and everyone's hand is going to be against him, and he's going to live to the east of his brothers. So they have this pretty big swath of land that they're in. And now we finally get to Isaac. So we've tied up Abraham's character. We've tied up Ishmael's character. Now we move to the next character, even though Abraham is still alive. And we know he's still alive because of the chronology of years, but also Hebrews 11 talks about Abraham dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob. So Abraham was still alive when Jacob was born. And in fact, Abraham doesn't die until Jacob and Esau are teenagers. So even though Moses has tied up the loose ends with Abraham, he's still around. So these are the records of the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham became the father of Isaac. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah. And that would have been back in the last chapter, chapter 24. And Rebekah is the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean, the sister of Laban. And Laban's going to come into play in chapter 28, because that's where Jacob flees when he kind of hightails it away from Esau. So, like his mother, Sarah, his wife, Rebekah, was barren. She was unable to have kids. And so Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife. And keep in mind, he gets married at 40. They don't have their first child. They don't have their children until he's 60. So for 20 years, he prayed that the Lord would open Rebekah's womb. He was faithful in that. He truly believed that at some point, Rebekah would have the ability to conceive. So he kept on praying. He kept on praying for 20 years. And the Lord answered him. Rebekah conceived. And after she conceived and the children are growing inside of her, it says in verse 22, the children struggled within her. So even in the womb, Jacob and Esau were fighting. And it's going to be a prelude to their relationship after they're born. And it's actually going to be a prelude to their relationship as nations, because you're going to see the nation of Edom and the nation of Israel, they're going to be at each other's throats. And even before Israel gets into the land, Edom is against Israel. So in Numbers 20, they're passing by the territory of Edom, and Moses sends a letter and says, do you mind if we pass through your territory? We will stay on the road. We won't go into the fields. We won't go into the vineyards. We won't even drink water from a well. We just want to go on the king's highway. We just want to pass through. And Edom says, you're not going to pass through. And if you try, I'm going to come out with a sword against you. So he tried to reason with them. That didn't work. And finally, they went around the territory. Psalm 137, Edom is the one who said, raise it, referring to Jerusalem, raise it to the ground. Joel talks about Edom shedding innocent blood with regard to the sons of Judah. Obadiah talks about Edom cutting off the people who were fleeing from, I think Obadiah was written in the time of the Babylonians. So Edom was right there with the Babylonians attacking Israel. So, and all of this is pictured in Jacob and Esau fighting inside Rebekah. Now keep in mind, Rebekah doesn't know she's having twins yet. She just knows something is really strange going on inside me. You know, whatever, you know, this child is really kicking and screaming. And so she says, if God has truly helped me to conceive, and this is of God, why is there such a struggle going on inside of me? And so she figured, well, if God's the one who helped me conceive, then he's probably the one to give me the answer to my question. So she consults the Lord, and the Lord said, you're having twins. Two nations are in your womb. Two peoples are going to be separated from your body. One people will be stronger than the other. That'll be Esau, stronger than Jacob. And the older Esau is going to serve the younger Jacob. And the blessing that Isaac gives to Jacob after Jacob deceived him actually bears that out, because the blessing to Jacob is, be master over your brothers or your relatives. And when Isaac talks to Esau after that, he says, your brother you shall serve. So that's going to actually play out. And even later on, in 2 Samuel 8 and in 1 Chronicles 18, it says that the Edomites became servants to David. So it's going to work its way out. So when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, well, lo and behold, there were twins in her womb, just like God had said. The first came forth red, all over like a hairy garment. So this boy had red hair over his entire body. He looked like a hairy garment. And so they named him Esau. And Esau probably means rough or hairy. That's kind of uncertain, but that's probably what it means. And he's going to be the founder of the nation of Edom. And that'll play out later on in Genesis. Afterward, his brother came forth with his hand holding onto Esau's heel. So Esau comes out and Jacob has his heel grabbing it. So he's called Jacob. And Jacob means heel grasper. And what's interesting, there's three Hebrew words that use the same consonants. And remember, when Moses wrote this, they didn't have vowels. They just, the written language only had consonants. They would know what the vowel sound would be, but it was never written. The vowels weren't written until millennia later. So the word for Jacob is Yaakov, and the word for heel is Akav, and the word for supplant is Akav. So the exact same three vowels or consonants are used. So Jacob is the heel grasper. He's also called the supplanter. And later on in Genesis 27, after Jacob gets Esau's blessing, Esau says, is he not rightly named Jacob? He supplanted me these two times. So Jacob, supplanter, heel, they're basically the same spellings. They're just pronounced differently. And that comes out also in Hosea 12, where it says, Jacob, in the womb, he took his brother by the heel. And the word heel there is actually the word for supplant. He supplanted his brother. And Isaac is 60 years old when she gives birth. So 20 years after they were married, they finally have kids. Boys grow up. And we don't know how much time elapsed. We know that Abraham died when they were 15. So at some point, Abraham is going to die in this story. The boys grow up. Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the field. So Esau, he loved to be outdoors. He was a hunter. He was very much like his uncle, Ishmael. He lived in the wilderness. He became an archer. Jacob was a peaceful man living in tents. And other translations bring out a similar idea. New King James says he was a mild man. NIV says he was content to stay at home. The Holman Christian Standard, he's a quiet man. The New English Translation, he's an even-tempered man. The NLT, he has a quiet temperament. So basically, Esau was an outdoorsman. Jacob was a quiet, even-tempered man. He preferred to stay at home and work. Esau, man of bloodshed. Jacob, yeah, I don't want to get my hands dirty kind of guy. Isaac loved Esau. So you wonder where Jacob got the whole idea of favoritism. Well, he got it from mom and dad. Isaac loved Esau because he had a taste for game. Rebecca loved Jacob because he was a stay-at-home guy. He helped around the encampment. Rebecca didn't have to do everything on her own. Jacob was there to help her. But Jacob, who becomes Israel, plays favorites with his son Joseph, which results in him being sold into slavery and the whole mess that brought. So Jacob, being the stay-at-home camp kind of guy, cooks some stew. Esau comes in from the field. He's famished. And so Esau says, let me have a swallow of that red stuff. And the word red is Edom. The word Edom is Edom. So the word red and the word Edom sound virtually identical. They use again the same consonants. They're just pronounced differently. And so when we finish this, he says, let me have a swallow of that red stuff. Therefore, his name is called Edom, Adom, Edom. They sound the same. So he's famished. Let me have some of that red stuff. Now, Jacob, he could have been a good brother, given Esau a swallow of what he was cooking. But instead, he makes this outrageous request before he'd even give his brother a taste of his red stuff. He wanted Esau's birthright. Now, the person who had the birthright was typically the firstborn. And it entitled you to a double portion of the inheritance. It entitled you to become the head of the family. And it entitled you to the blessing prior to your father's passing. So those three things, you get a double portion of the inheritance, you become the head of the family, you get the blessing. And no one in their right mind would sell their birthright for a swallow of red stuff, except Esau. So he says, I'm about to die. Now, he's definitely has a flair for the dramatic and quite the exaggerator. So apparently having a growling stomach because he didn't take a sandwich with him out into the fields suddenly means he's going to die. I'm about to die, and if I die, what use is my birthright? So fine, it's yours. And Jacob, he's not quite satisfied with it. First, swear to me Well, you're swearing an oath, and you're swearing an oath by God. So you don't break that. And unfortunately, we're not told what the oath was, what he said. He simply says he swore to him. And so he sold his birthright to Jacob. And he would have known, when I sell my birthright, I sell everything associated with it. I've sold off the double portion of my inheritance. I've sold off the head of the family, and I've sold off my blessing. But he's just not thinking. And when we get into chapter 27, the fact of the matter is Jacob did not need to deceive Isaac. The blessing was already Jacob's. Esau forfeited the blessing right here. So Jacob did not need to deceive Isaac. And when Jacob says he's taken away my birthright and he's taken away my blessing, no, you were an idiot and sold it. Jacob didn't take away anything. Jacob didn't steal anything. You sold it for some red stuff. So Jacob, now that he's got the birthright, sworn on oath by God, hey, have some bread along with that lentil stew. Here, let me pour you a glass of something to drink. So he eats, he drinks, he gets up and goes on his way. And the chapter ends, thus Esau despised his birthright. He considered it as nothing. His birthright was irrelevant. And Hebrews, when Hebrews is talking about the blessing, after Jacob acquires the blessing, which he did deceitfully, even though he didn't need to, it says that Esau desired to inherit it. He was rejected, even though he sought for it with tears. And Hebrews describes Esau as an immoral, godless person who sold his own birthright for a single meal. That was immoral and it was godless. And that's how Esau goes down in history. So next time we will do chapter 26. Any questions?
Did he ever get it back? I don't remember the rest of the story.
Did he ever get his birthright?
Yeah.
Nope.
Ooh, man, bad mistake.
But what's interesting, I'll jump ahead into chapter 27. After Jacob gets the blessing, Esau is furious. He's you know, prepared to murder his own brother. And Isaac and Rebekah send him away. He's gone for 20 years. When he comes home, Esau comes to meet him with 400 men, and Jacob is thinking, uh-oh, I'm toast. 20 years have gone by, and he's still angry, and he's not. He actually runs up, embraces his brother, kisses him, weeps over him. So he got over it, but he didn't get the blessing, and he didn't get the birthright. But he got over it, even though the Bible still says he despised it and he's immoral and godless for doing so.
Wow.
He did take the present that Jacob gave him, though.
Yeah, he did. And you know, you would think Jacob would, okay, we've made up. I'll follow him. Jacob lies to him again. You know, Esau's heading south, and as soon as Esau's over the hill, Jacob heads west. And it's not until Isaac dies that they finally come back together. So Jacob just doesn't learn his lesson. I mean,
yeah, he said he was going to get there slowly. Let me take my time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he never shows up.
Never shows up, goes in another direction.
Jeff, you mentioned four people who were described as dying at a ripe old age.
Yes.
One was David and one was Abraham.
Isaac and Gideon.
Oh, Gideon. Okay. Can you
give you the references?
No, can you imagine what the connections are? I mean, Abraham, Isaac, David, but why, you know?
Yeah, I don't know why God sticks Gideon in there, but
did they all die at the same age?
No,
roughly.
David was pretty.
Abraham died at 175. Isaac died at 180.
Yeah.
David died
70, 60.
No, David. Yeah. David would have died 70. Well, he was 40 years old. 30. Yeah, probably.
I think he was 80.
I don't know how old Gideon was.
No. So, John will be glad to hear that at 87, John Duckman will be glad to hear that at 87, Abraham was described as being in the prime of life.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, between 86 and 99, he was in the prime of life.
Oh, hey.
Nobody beats Moses, though. He was at 120. He was as sharp as a tack. Yeah, so he's got some mileage yet.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Well, yeah. I always get a kick out of Isaac because when he goes to bless Esau, he says, you know, I'm about to die. Well, he doesn't die for another 43 years. Yeah, so... Yeah, you're a little sick. You got a sniffle. You're not going to die.
Jeff, it's interesting. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's interesting to compare the blessing that he gives to Jacob, thinking that he's Esau, and then the blessing that's left over for Esau. Mm-hmm. It's one is really thin, and the other one is obviously loaded with it. So that at least Isaac tries to come up with something for his son, you know.
Well, and even what he comes up with is more of a curse than a blessing.
It's pretty thin, charitably thin.
Jeff, is there any indication in scripture where when Rebecca died?
No. We know that she probably... Well, she would have died during the 20 years that Jacob was gone. Yeah. But when, we don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, because when she says, you know, you go up to my brother Laban and I'll send for you. And he's gone and he's waiting and mom's not sending for me. 20 years go by, he finally comes back. Oh, she's been buried by dad already.